Blog Talk Radio.
This is the NLPI Friday Night Paranormal Show with Mickey Gokul and Kurt Logsdon.
Oh, yes, it's Friday night yet again. And of course it is. It's going to be Friday every Friday, isn't it? Hi, guys and girls. It's Mickey Gokul with you on NLPI Radio. What we've got planned today, we've got a UFO special. Check that out, guys and girls. We've got Antonio from Aerial Phenomena, okay, Aerial Phenomena. He is going to be joining us live on the show, guys, ladies and gents. If you don't know who Aerial Phenomena are, you will do so, because he's going to be here to tell us about his organization and how he investigates UFO sightings in America. Also coming on the show tonight, we have got the one and only, the crazy ufologist. He's going to join us on the show. I cannot wait for this show to take place. And not forgetting the one and only who is live here right now with me in USA, it's him.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome all the way from the USA, your NLPI Friday Night Paranormal Show host.
How you doing, my friend? How's it going, Mickey? Love that intro.
It's going really good. I've had a really good week. We've had some good. We've had some really good weather. We've had some really freaky weather. Our house got hit by lightning. Yes.
Wow.
Nothing to do with me. More to do with. Yeah, it got hit by lightning. And I only noticed this morning when there was a big chunk of the house laying in the front garden. But that's another story. Hey, Kurt, I'm really excited about the show.
Oh, I'm excited as hell right now. I'm very stoked for the show. I'm ready to roll, man. I'm going a million miles an hour.
We've also got, listen to this, we've got a regular guest on the show, but also he's a British actor. His name is Joe Gooch. Now, Joe wants to join us on the show tonight, but he's on stage in Edinburgh, in a production called Anna. So, as we're going on now, unfortunately, Joe can't join us. So, say hello to Joe. Hi, Joe. We know you're on stage. We know you're performing in Anna. We want to wish you all the best for your performance, and we will see you at 10 o'clock, because he's coming straight from the stage in Edinburgh, and he's coming to join us live on our show at 10 o'clock. How's that for showbiz?
That's awesome. We're bringing an actor right off stage, man, right to the show. That's only we can do that. Only definitely pull that one off.
Only we want to do that, really.
Yeah.
Of course, UFO special tonight. UFO special. Oh, Joe. You know, Joe was saying a little while ago when we were just having a quick chat offline or online. And he was saying that he had a UFO experience almost 30 years ago, 31 years now. So we want to talk to him about that experience, because I believe, people have seen things that are very similar. So Joe Gooch, British actor, live on stage right now in Edinburgh, will be joining us on the show as soon as he comes off stage. So check that one out, okay? And, you know, we love Joe. Joe's fantastic. He's got his video of his sighting, his UFO sighting, but he took that 30 years after the event, and that's on Joe's Facebook page. Hopefully I'll get to put that on. ladies and gents, Antonio from Aerial Phenomena is here. Guys and girls, the main man, let's give it up for him. Antonio's here, guys and girls. Now, if you don't know Antonio, Antonio Paris from Aerial Phenomena in the USA. Antonio has got a list of credentials that makes army generals look like Boy Scouts, Kurt.
Yeah.
This guy's credentials are unbelievable. I mean, yeah, when I say credentials, have you read his credentials? He'll be hopefully telling us his background and what qualifies him as one of USA's leading UFO investigators, and he's here with us tonight. So I'm excited.
I'm excited too. I got a few questions for him also. I mean, like solid questions that a buddy of mine I was just talking to into UFOs and stuff like that, and he threw a couple questions out. I go, well, you know what? I can't answer them. He couldn't answer them. So I go, why we got the best sound on tonight? Why not ask him? You know, so that way we can just see what his take is on it.
Yeah, and on top of that, we've also got the ufologist Nigel Wright. The crazy ufologist. Now, is he England's answer to Antonio? We don't know. But the two guys are here, and we'll be hearing from them in a short while. Just waiting for them to come into studio. We'll be hearing from them about 9:30. Let's catch up, Kurt. Let's catch up. Did you like our new intro? For those guys that didn't hear it, I know... hi, Julia. Kurt, Julia Stocker is in England, sir.
Julia's in England? Uh-oh.
Julia is in England. Julia Stocker is a fan of North London Paranormal Investigations. Hi, Julia and friends.
Hello, Julia.
She's normally in Germany, but she's over here doing a work placement. And you know what? They placed her in Swansea, miles away. We can get her on the train, and we've already given Julia a VIP ticket to the paranormal investigation that we're having at the nuclear bunker in September. So she's got the VIP ticket already. That's been sent. She's got that. She's coming to that event as a VIP guest, as our guest, and hopefully she'll take home lots of goodies to take back to the USA, take back to Germany. And hopefully we'll have some goodies for you as well to take back to USA when you come.
No,
that's a long way away, I know, Kurt. But before you come to England, you're going to learn how to cook English food from our last few shows. What sort of progress have you made?
Here's what we're in production right now. I bought the roast. I went out. I videotaped myself buying the roast. But... here's where I found out. I got to a point, I'm like, I really needed somebody else to videotape me in the store. Because there was so much I could have done just with props and things on shelves and this like that before I even got to the roast. But I couldn't do it, and I was looking around, and people were like, who's that guy talking to himself? I got like one of these little mini Samsung HD recorder things. And I was using that, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back in the store, reshoot it. I already bought the roast. I got to buy the rest of the goodies, but it's going to be done, and it's going to be done right. And that's why I didn't want to rush through it. But yes, it is in production. It's off the ground. The gate is opened, and we are ready to go.
Ready?
Yeah. I spent roast cost me about $13, $13. I got to buy potatoes, I got to buy carrots, I got to buy onions, I got to look at, Tina has a cookbook that has Yorkshire pudding in, Yorkshire pudding recipe. So I forgot.
Yorkshire pudding.
Yorkshire. Yorkshire versus
Yorkshire pudding.
Yorkshire
with
pudding,
gravy.
Yes. With gravy, it's going to be done. With the roast, with the drips, you mix all the stuff in with the drippings from the roast. And you're creating yourself Yorkshire pudding. And that will be eaten. I'll be eating it too, so I made it. I got to eat it. But I want to get her reaction.
And send us
on
some.
It. Yeah.
Send us some as well, you know.
How the hell do I do that? Stuff's going to be green by the time it gets to you. You know? I'd love to.
I was a student once. I'm used to green food.
Yeah,
Kurt, we've got our UFO special, which is lined up for 9:30, ladies and gents that are in the room and listening. So we will welcome Antonio from Aerial Phenomena in the USA and Nigel Wright. We also may have Gillian Trench you know, a regular of NLPI Radio. She'll be coming on because Gillian was, of course, an investigator for Proofon in the UK. So, sorry, Proofos. Sorry, my apologies. In the UK. So, hopefully, fingers crossed, we can get Gillian Trench and Nigel Wright and also Antonio Paris. I love his name. Not only that, he's going to be here in September, I believe, Kurt, and he's going to be signing a copy of his new book, which is called Aerial Phenomena. So, guys, Antonio's book is out there. It's available to buy also from his website and aerialphenomena.org. Check the book out. It's really interesting. Check out his video. It covers Area 51. We will talk to the man about Area 51. We will talk to him about his book. We will talk to him about his experiences as well, okay? But before we do that, in 20 minutes' time, okay, the 20 minutes just gives us guys a bit of a chance to have some fun and have some catch-up like we're doing. Last week, we had an EVP special. Now, Gillian Trench sent me a copy of the EVP. She cleared it up a little bit and she can make some stuff out, but some other stuff, and some other people got some other stuff, but nobody really got the same thing. We had no real sort of
winners.
You know, it was all very different. So that was last week's show where we played the most terrific EVP, and we want you to listen to it and more or less, you know, give us your version of what you believe is actually going on in that EVP. And we got different responses. What we'll do is we'll carry that on for another week. Talking of EVP, you may remember that last week we had Donna on the show. Well, Donna had the EVP that she captured on an iPhone app. The iPhone app was basically designed to monitor the sleep patterns of, you know, when one's asleep. So she purchases this device and, you know, makes it work at night time. And what happens? It actually records what she believes and what I believe is a Class A EVP, which we played last week on the show. So that's interesting. I mean, that was really interesting. I've got that. If you guys haven't heard that, I think I've still got that somewhere. I might play that later on. But 9:15 here in London. What time is it there where you are, Kurt?
4:15 East Coast US. 4:15
PM. 15 minutes time. Yeah, 15 minutes time. We've got them. We've got the guys all to ourselves. Also, what else are we doing on this show? Last week I said about Ghost Adventures coming out this week. Well, I was wrong, Kurt.
Oh, you were
I was wrong.
Wrong.
I was wrong.
Oh, so
it's not this week.
It's not this week. But don't.
It's next week.
Well, let's. I'd say we do a pre-Ghost Adventures kind of thing going on. What do you think?
I think that because the guys here are pretty much Ghost Adventures fans. I mean, you all know Ghost Adventures. That's coming on next week, not this week. And I'm really sorry. So, for you fans out there, I'm gonna just give you a reminder of what the show's about.
My name is Zach Bagans. I never believed in ghosts until I came face to face with one. So I set out on a quest to capture what I once saw onto video.
Is there anybody here?
With no big camera crews following us around, I am joined only by my fellow investigator, Nick Roth, and our equipment tech, Aaron Goodwin. The three of us will travel to some of the most highly active paranormal locations where we will spend an entire night being locked down from dusk until dawn.
If this is the portal of hell, why don't you come up out of that ground and get us?
Raw.
Did someone just scratch me?
Extreme.
Stop running!
These are our ghost adventures.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen, the intro to Ghost Adventures, which is on your screens next week. So my apologies for saying it was this week because I messed up. I thought I was last week. I'm so confused. But, Kurt, I understand.
Yes.
I understand that the Ghost Adventures crew have got another show.
Yeah.
Now
they do.
This is a warning for everybody that's here. Just a reminder that this show is listed as a mature show, which means that there are some parts of this show that may contain sexual references, or they may contain swear words, etc., etc. So I want you guys to be aware that we are running a live show, and if there are sexual references or swear words or whatever, we're not in control of that. So we have classed tonight's show as mature. Got that, Kurt?
Yes, sir.
Good. Right. Now we've got that out of the way and everybody's over 18. Where's Julia gone? Julia's gone. It's only a short part of the show. But I've got right reason to, because Ghost Adventures crew have got another show. They have got another show. And we got hold of a little bit of a preview of that show, guys and girls, ladies and gents. First time ever. Listen to this. Ghost Adventures crew, brand new show.
My name is Dickie Local. I never believed in hoes until I came in the face of one. So I get out of my bed and capture a whore onto video.
Is everybody queer?
With no big-breasted girls following us around, I am joined closely by my fellow masturbator Lick Cock and our sex toy tech Ivor Biggin. The three of us will fornicate at some of the most highly active Bangkok brothels, where we will spend the entire week getting laid from dusk until dawn.
This is the whore from hell. Come on out of that bar and come and get us.
Roar.
Did you just charge me?
Wet dreams.
Stop! Stop coming!
These are our four adventures.
Oh my God! I've listened to that thing four times and I've laughed as hard as I am right now each time I did it. That's their new show, man. That is their new show right there. I'm
no
sorry.
Offense, obviously no offense. But, you know, when you listen back to that's a mature part of the show. That's it. So that's what we do. Every now and again, we just drop something in for a bit of a laugh. And, we've had a giggle. And I think that was funny. I just hope that Zach doesn't take it offensively. I've sent it to him anyway, so.
Did you really?
You know, but you guys, yeah, I did, yeah. I'm just waiting for him to call me a bastard or something. But, yeah, I've sent it to him. And if he's cool with that, well, you know, we'll go with it. But there you go. Yeah. So you guys heard it first. So I don't want it appearing on the internet or on Twitter or anywhere else because, you know, it belongs here. Okay? And where are we, Kurt? North London? Paranormal Investigations Radio?
Yes. North London.
And coming up very soon, we have Mary Brooks on the line. Hold on tight. This is the NLPI Friday Night Paranormal Show with Mickey Gokul and Kurt Logston. My name is... My throat was killing me at the end of today, I can tell you. It's just... I'm just trying to get that... I don't know how he can manage to keep it up. I bet he squeaks really. Mary Brooks.
Hi.
What's up, Mary?
Hi, Mary. How are you?
Can you hear me, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you. Say hi to Kurt.
Hi. Okay.
Say
hey,
hi to Kurt,
Mary.
I managed to get through this time.
We can hear you this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you really loud. You're loud and clear. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Thanks.
Can you? We can hear you, but we can hear you intermittently. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay, thank you.
Good. Well, thanks for joining us on the show. Have you got an experience that you want to tell anyone about? And a nice one as well, not a naughty one.
Well, we've had things in here happen, but my mum thinks we've all lost the plot because she doesn't believe us.
I need you to come back from your mic about half an inch because you're really loud.
Oh, okay.
So
is that
if you move back, come back about half an inch. There we go. That's
okay.
Perfect. You now sound, you sound like a star. Or you
okay.
Sing.
Okay.
Mum thinks you've lost the plot because you've got. Mum thinks you've lost the plot because you've got stuff going on in the house.
Yeah.
Okay. What sort of stuff have you got going on?
Well, we hear either the toaster will flick up by itself, or we hear a fork being picked up from the draining board when we're, like, when we've had, like, washing up that we've left.
Okay. And does that happen all the time? Oh, I'm losing you. Back to you, Mary. Okay, we'll come back to you because I'm just losing you there as well. Kurt.
Yes, sir.
We've got, 10 minutes? I said that twice. I want to play that that jingle again. Because Julia logged out, and I don't know whether it was deliberately Julia logged out or it was an accident, but it was appropriate. The timing was appropriate.
Yeah, I think Julie would understand. I think she would understand because it's funny as hell. Sorry, maybe it's just my sense of humor, your sense of humor, but to me, it's funny as hell. And I know if Mo was listening, I don't know, I don't see the chat room for me, but he'd think it's funny as hell. So, you know, there you go. It's all the
yeah, case. I think Mo enjoyed that one.
Mo would enjoy that one.
Nice one, Mo.
Yeah. It was
if you're wondering who Mo is, Mo is indeed your co-host on Tuesdays.
Yeah, on Tuesdays.
NLPI USA.
NLPI USA, yeah. Mo is, and
I have to make a little complaint about your show, Kurt, because, you know, with all due respect, Mo's not in the USA. He's in the UK.
Yeah, but, you know, I got to have a tie-in to the UK one way or another. So,
We need someone from America. That's what we need. We need someone from the USA. So, you'll have to donate somebody to us, quite simply. Yeah, just find somebody, I don't know, somebody that's quite, you know, well-spoken, a bit of a Starla voice. Starla would be good.
Yeah, I tried to do that, but that was, there's some stuff going on I'm not allowed to talk about, and I'm not going to bring up, I'll tell you off air, that I was nicked in the bud because I offered her a spot on our show. Offered her a spot on our show, and she said no, and there's a bunch of stuff behind it, and, you know, just drama stuff. I'll fill you in.
Yes, and
but,
I can't wait.
Yeah, you're sitting on the edge of your seat right now, but I can't lose Mo, man. Mo's my attachment, you know? Not in a perverted way, either. But he's my, like, paranormal attachment. I need Mo. Mo's my go-to guy.
And not like...
Crazy.
Not like Ovi the attachment.
Oh, Ovi the attachment is funnier than hell. Ovi the attachment. He's the show's attachment. He's the show's attachment.
He's the show's attachment.
Yeah, we have a show attachment. Yeah. Yeah, I'll be the attachment, and the more likes he gets on Facebook, the more obnoxious questions he asks our guests. So that's the deal. If people aren't liking it, he doesn't like to show off. He's a bit of a show-off, you know what I'm saying? He likes to get his voice out there sometimes every once in a while.
That's a shame. That's a shame. So in 5 minutes or so, just had Nigel calling me on Skype. He's ready to come in. Nigel, if you're listening, on the main page would be that Skype button. Hit that Skype button. That'll take you through to the studio. We've also got, what have I got? I've got last week we did the top 10 UFO sightings. Well, I've got another top 10 UFO sightings as well, which is slightly different to what we had last week. And I think that. I think it's going to be interesting, and that should hopefully lead us up to 9:30, which will take us through to our experts. But have a listen to this. It is taken from a website, and I've kept the website naming deliberately. So have a listen to this, guys, and make your own mind up.
They've been where no man has gone before. Welcome to WatchMojo.com, and today we'll be counting down our picks for the top 10 most well-documented UFO sightings.
They move in stealthy secrecy. They are unidentified, alien, extraterrestrial, UFO.
Number 10, the Baltic Sea Anomaly. Found 300 feet below the Baltic Sea's surface, this isn't an unidentified flying object, but when Swedish treasure hunters located this 200-foot round, 12-foot-thick irregularity, it was definitely unidentified. Most experts suggest it's either rocks, a Nazi-era piece of equipment, or something equally man-made. Okay, it may not be alien, but you have to admit it looks like the Millennium Falcon. Number 9, the Belgian UFO wave. Can over 13,000 people be wrong? That's how many Belgians reported seeing a series of triangle-shaped lights in the sky on March 30, 1990, after 6 months of similar, smaller-scale activity. F-16s chased whatever it was, but the UFOs were so fast and so unpredictable that it was impossible. Photos associated with this event were later discredited, but this remains one of the most well-documented UFO sightings ever. Number 8, the Phoenix Lights. In an eerily similar event, hundreds of Arizona, Nevada, and Mexico residents, including the Arizona governor, witnessed floating orbs of light and a V-shaped vehicle passing through the night sky. The resulting amateur video caused a media firestorm and fueled speculation. The military claimed the lights were simply flares they'd launched, but due to the light's precise formation, many were skeptical. Number 7, the Keksberg UFO incident. What causes a fireball, sonic booms, grass fires, and dropping metal fragments? A meteor? A downed Soviet satellite? When whatever it was crash-landed in Keksberg, Pennsylvania, residents investigated but were stopped by an army barricade. Though officials reported that nothing was found, locals swore they witnessed the military leaving with a large, acorn-shaped object on a flatbed truck. Number 6, STS-75, the Tether Incident. For their tethered satellite system, NASA sends tethers into space for a variety of research-related reasons. However, this particular trial failed when the tether broke. But the event became famous with conspiracy theorists for what happened next. As seen in this video, a bunch of unidentified flying objects appeared near the tether. NASA called it space debris, however, some believe alien UFOs were caught on tape. Number 5, the Battle of Los Angeles. It's 3 months after the Pearl Harbor attack. It's 3 a.m., and a UFO is spotted flying near L.A. The Army figures it's a hostile Japanese aircraft. They shoot 1,400 rounds of ammo into the sky and hit nothing. No debris was found, but several civilians did die from shock and friendly fire. The official explanation? Maybe a blimp, a weather balloon, or fighter planes. Or maybe it never happened at all. Number 4, the Washington, D.C. flap. Radars recorded strange blips. Eyewitnesses described dazzling orange light. Once the flying saucers reportedly swarmed the White House, President Truman okayed a shoot-down order, but soon backtracked by submitting that the UFOs were actually mirages caused by temperature inversions. Eventually, the government-appointed Robertson panel suggested that more time be spent on debunking UFO reports altogether, rather than investigating them, which is why many discredit official government explanations even today.
Of this great mass of reports, we have been able adequately to explain the great bulk of them. Explain them to our own satisfaction.
Number 3, the Kenneth Arnold UFO sighting. Roswell may be the hotbed of alien activity, but around the same time, Washington's Mount Rainier was in the headlines thanks to Kenneth Arnold's experience while flying nearby. He reliably detailed what he called flying saucers, or bright flashes of light traveling at unheard-of speed through the air. While the events were later corroborated by others, they were never proven. However, they did usher in the modern UFO era. Number 2, the Mantell UFO incident. This was when public perception towards supposed alien encounters shifted from a joke to something more serious. Skilled airman Captain Thomas Mantell was pursuing an unidentified white object spotted over Kentucky when, according to official reports, he crashed after running out of oxygen. Since this was possibly the first UFO-related human casualty, Unsubstantiated rumors swirled that he'd been shot down by aliens and that his body was covered in strange holes. Number 1. Roswell. Roswell, New Mexico has been synonymous with conspiracy and aliens since strange debris turned up in the desert. Dismissed as a fallen weather balloon from the top-secret Project Mogul, the wreckage story re-emerged in 1978 when an eyewitness described wood-like substances that wouldn't burn, paper-thin metal that wouldn't dent, and unreadable symbols printed on the rubble. Conspiracy theorists took this as proof of a far-reaching government cover-up and the existence of aliens.
Something did crash. Something was recovered. Whatever was recovered, the government still has it in its possession.
Do you believe in aliens? Which UFO sighting do you find the most believable? For more top tens about your favorite conspiracies, be sure to subscribe to WatchMojo.com.
There you go. There you go. Top 10 UFO sightings. What do you think of that? Do you agree Roswell being the top 10, the number one of the top 10? Of course it is. Of course it is. But who am I to tell you who's who and what's what? Let's hear from the expert. Ladies and gents, will you please welcome, live on LPI Radio, the director of Aerial Phenomena. It's Antonio Paris, ladies and gents.
Hey,
big round of applause.
Thank you. Hey, I want to make sure.
Hey.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
Excellent.
Kurt, you can hear.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I just want to start off with giving you guys a big thanks for having me on this show tonight. I'm very honored. I wish I was over there and we could do a live show, but you know what? The great thing about technology is that no matter how far away we are, we can have this conversation tonight, and let's make it fun. You know, let's make it fun.
Absolutely. Well, we always have a bit of fun on a Friday night. It started out as a fun and frolics night for paranormal people and people in the industry, but we also have a serious tone to it. And when we go into our discussions, which we do at 9:30, you know, we're very dedicated, very passionate. We followed you with interest, Antonio. Your tweets are very interesting. Your reports on your website are amazing. And, you know, you've got a book as well, which I just can't wait to get my hands on. So,
yeah, just
without further ado, we'll I'm booking mine straight away after the show. Don't you worry about that. And I'm sure other people will as well. But, Antonio, your credentials are long as my arm, even longer. You know, when I looked at your credentials for the first time, I was blown away, absolutely blown away. I don't know if you can tell the guys that are listening your background and how you actually got yourself into investigating UFOs.
Yeah, it's really, you know, first off, I've always been interested in, you know, the search for extraterrestrial life, and not necessarily initially UFOs per se, but, you know, the interest is there life somewhere out there in the universe, and not necessarily little green men visiting Earth. But nevertheless, you know, I was a former special agent for the Department of Defense and also an intelligence officer, specifically in the counterintelligence aspect of the intel community. And towards the end of that career, as I was getting into grad school, I was studying planetary science with a little bit of astrophysics. And towards my last semester, I was writing a paper on what would it take to, you know, send a manned mission to Mars. And I started thinking more about extraterrestrials and, you know, UFOs and things like that. And so I said to myself, you know what, it'd be a cool idea if I can put my two backgrounds together. You know, what is it that I do as an investigator, you know, when I was at the Department of Defense, and what is it that I learned in graduate school about extraterrestrials and planetary science and those processes involved. So I said to myself, I'd like to be, you know, something like a Sherlock Holmes, to put both of these backgrounds together and hopefully, you know, look at UFOs from a different perspective, and not necessarily try to answer the question if little green men are visiting Earth and you know, allegedly abducting people and things like that. But more importantly, what is it that people are seeing? Because they're not all crazy. People are seeing stuff. And then possibly answer the second question is it what some of the stuff people seen extraterrestrial? And that's what I've been trying to do for the last few years. And the second part of my mission is trying to clean up a little bit of what the ufology has become. You know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, it was kind of a serious subject. And unfortunately today, it's almost a mockery and a laughing stock to people. You know, you mention the word UFO amongst your friends and they giggle and they laugh and they call you tinfoil hat. And it's now synonymous with conspiracy theories, hoaxes, new age, you know, those type of things. And I think that's why mainstream science, the academia, don't really touch UFOs.
Okay.
I thought you guys left.
Sorry, my apologies. No, I was I had my mic on mute because sometimes I just like to listen and then I forget because I'm just so interested in the subject. In the USA, on average, how many UFO sightings would you deal with on a monthly basis or a weekly basis? What's the numbers that
That's kind of a tough question because if you look at one organization, let's say MUFON, they probably have 10,000 a year. And you look at NUFORC, National UFO Reporting Center, they probably have about 7,000 to 8,000 a year. So that doesn't mean that there's a total of 18,000 because we don't know if there's redundancy. A lot of people will report the same sighting to three or four websites.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't think there's, at least from what I am aware of, nobody's actually gone out and looked at all the data and done a strategic analysis of the phenomena. And that's what I'm hoping to do in the future is remove the redundancy. But I would say on average, I would say you have to be careful with this. Just because MUFON gets 10,000 reports a year, that doesn't mean that they're UFOs. If you scrub the data...
Yeah.
A lot of it is you know, basic stuff, weather anomalies, satellites, hoaxes. There's a lot of hoaxes on these websites. People just trying to waste your time. And so when people say, you know, oh, my God, we've had 10,000 UFO reports that year, you have to be careful with that wording. And not all states here are equal. You know, in California and Texas, you usually get the highest UFO reports, whereas in the D.C. area are always last. Now, that doesn't mean extraterrestrials don't like Maryland. You know, it's just that in the West Coast, there's lesser air restrictions. The populations are higher in the West Coast, so people are reporting more things. Whereas here in the East Coast, we have highly restricted airspaces, less populations and things like that.
Aerial.
Yes.
I got a question for you real quick. You talked about different places. I live in Maryland. I'm coming out of D.C. area here. And you made a good point on that. There are rarely any reports of UFOs in this area where I live in. And I'm like 15 minutes outside the city.
Yeah.
So, but my next question is, I have a listener who was in the military. And word is in the military, like the hotbed of the area – where and you can answer this for me because it's more of a question to you, is Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, 30 minutes from Cincinnati. That's one of the versus, let's say, Area 51 as being the most secretive place and what most well-guarded. Is that true when it comes to UFOs?
There are rumors that a lot of the activity that was in particular out of Nevada, Area 51, that a lot of that activity has now been moved over to Wright-Patterson Air Base. I don't know because my intent is not to go down, you know, the rabbit holes and start chasing conspiracies, trying to investigate military bases. I really want to stay away from that. That's cool stuff for other people that like to do that stuff. But my goal is to investigate nuts and bolts phenomena. I'm interested in Area 51. I'm interested in Wright-Patterson or whatever, or the Dulce base out of northern New Mexico. But at the end, if you really want to investigate that stuff, you have to know people inside those bases. You have to try to access the bases. And I need to be careful and stay away from that stuff because I am cleared. I still work for here in Washington, D.C. for various clients. So I draw a thin line. I draw a really thin line that I never cross. UFOs is my hobby. And when I work on classified work, that's what's paying the bills. And I never try to use my credentials to try to get on, LSF Air Force Base or Wright-Patterson to look for UFOs. That's not
That would get you into some trouble.
That would get me in jail.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. That's not a good thing. Stick with what you're doing is a great thing, actually.
Yeah. I'm kind of skeptical a bit about that the government, are hiding these aliens and these crash saucers. They might, there's a lot of rumors out there, deathbed confessions, alleged papers that are being leaked, like MJ-12 and things like that. But that's not the type of investigations that I try to work on. I think that's fun and that's cool, but I don't think it's going to actually help me shape the investigations that I do.
Okay, I see what you're saying right there. I mean, you're basically just taking – and I got the second question I have to ask you. This is from a listener right now, real quick.
Sure.
There's a theory out there also that UFOs – and there was a guy, and I don't know this guy's name. My friend was telling me earlier. I totally forgot. Who has this theory that UFOs usually a lot of times don't come from space. They actually come from under the ocean. I mean, has that ever come out as a theory or
that
anything?
I've not had any of those cases yet, but there is a lot of, chatter, internet chatter, things like that. You sometimes see it on TV about USOs, underwater submersible objects.
What he called it, yeah.
And areas like Puerto Rico for some reason, the Caribbean, and here we go now, when you start talking about the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, the Bermuda Triangle, yeah.
There's talk of a lot of stuff that credible people, have seen come out of the water. Now, you have to be careful, though. Just because you see something come out of the water, that doesn't mean it's from a different planet. That could be ours. I'm not saying it's ours, but you can't jump to conclusions and say, oh my God, something just came out of the water. It can't be ours, because we don't have that kind of stuff. And I always ask the person, well, how do you know we don't have that stuff?
How do you know exactly?
Yeah.
How
do
you know?
There's a lot of
the problem I have.
Yeah.
The problem I have is with governments. Now, We all know about UFOs. We all have theories about UFOs. We all, do they exist? Yes, they exist. Do they belong to us? We don't know. There's cases of one government phoning another government and saying, there's something in your airspace and it's not us, so don't fire back. there's people talking about it. We know of these cases. And the bottom line is that we have got UFOs in our airspace and the people that are in charge don't seem to be taking much notice. I walk down the street with my friend Kurt, and Kurt gets abducted by two men in a white van, and they take him away, I go to the police station and I say, Kurt's been abducted by a white van by these two guys wearing Harry Potter costumes. They kind of think, okay, well, we're registration number now, we can find the van, we can have a look for it. This is the thing, it's so easy. They look for the van, they find Kurt, and everyone's happy, we go home and we get married.
Yeah.
UFOs. And
I just had a great...
If you get taken away by UFO,
yeah.
What is this with our government? If people are being abducted by UFOs, by things that we don't understand, yet the government know about them, if people are being abducted... put stand up and say, listen, I don't mind you looking at our planet and taking resources and doing what you need to do, but can you leave our people alone? You know, because you've got the technology to bypass what you need to do. You don't. With all due respect, aliens, whoever they may be, are far superior to anything we ever know. What I don't understand is why they're using practically prehistoric technology, because they're using the same techniques that we're using today in medicine. You know, they're using probes,
yeah,
although they're used slightly differently.
I think that's a good point that you bring up. I rarely investigate, I call it alleged abductions, because a lot of times I quickly notice that, I'm not a psychiatrist, and these people do need mental health.
Yes.
Professional. But what I notice is when I start reading about these abduction cases, there's nothing really that's mind-bending or far out that leads me to believe that it's extraterrestrial. If you look at the reports, a lot of the 99% of them is they can't move. They're in some type of room that's cold. They see medical equipment. It's really kind of, think about it, you know, a hospital emergency room or something. Now, I'm not just saying that they're crazy.
Absolutely.
And they're not being abducted, but of all the alleged abduction cases I've investigated, there's no physical proof beyond a reasonable doubt that they've been abducted. Now, I'm not saying they're lying.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying something didn't happen to them, but I'm not in the business of believing. I'm in the business of looking for proof, and that's the difference.
Yes.
Between myself and other organizations. You know, I love my witnesses. For the most part, I believe what they're telling me. You know, I can tell when they're lying or pulling a leg, and those are hoaxes. But there's not much they can provide me other than a story, and we've got enough of those, you know, enough stories, and that's not.
Absolutely.
We're not looking for more stories. We're looking for proof.
Well, the whole thing about the abductions is, this is my theory, and I've never shared this with anyone before, and I've got lots of theories about UFOs that I have shared, but this one is unique to this show. When you're abducted. For example, I get abducted today, and I spend 5 hours in a UFO, and then I come back, you know, and all I remember is this medical procedure, you know, the probes, the genitals, and all that. And then I sit back and I take a step back and I think, you know what? Some people's imagination is very restricted to what they know in their own world. And if you give, you know, look. If I've got a device sat next to me and you describe that device in great detail, then either you've been in my house or you're very, very telepathic.
Sure.
If aliens are telepathic, which we are led to believe they are, then everything that they do can be done almost wirelessly. I mean, look at us. We're talking on 2.4 gigahertz. We're talking across wires. We're talking across satellites right now. And we're in 2013. These guys are flying pieces of metal that we don't even understand, anti-gravity devices all over the place, if they are real. And, you know, they can come into our airspace unnoticed, very silent. They can do lots
of
things.
And they crash. They crash all the time for some reason.
And they crash. Well, like anything else, you know, they probably haven't mastered the universe, but they're like us. You know, they're attempting to. Let's go back 2,000 years. No, let's go back 5,000. No, let's go back 10,000 years. Look at the Mayan temples. Look at that work that's been done. The whole thing with Stone Age man or prehistoric man being able to carve these temples out with a flint axe or whatever it is. I don't believe that, because some of these blocks that have made temples and the pyramids are 200 tons. We don't have anything today that is capable of lifting 200 tons, let alone cutting laser precision rocks and then moving them into place. I mean, there was some technology here before, and I believe that we are the aliens. We left this planet. We went away for 2 years in alien time, in space time, 2 years. In Earth time, 12,000 years. And then we come back to the planet, you know, hoping that whatever catastrophe happened is over, and that we can come back to our planet, which would be all nice and green and fresh for us. We come back and we see it's been overridden by a virus. It's been covered in concrete. We don't even recognize our own temples that we built thousands of years ago. But we've only been gone 2 years and we can't believe the destruction that's been caused. Is that why UFOs are being sighted across ancient monuments all over the world? Is that why UFOs are sighted over military installations? Because they're looking at our capability and thinking, oh my God, look at these guys. I'm going to slap an antisocial behavior order on planet Earth because it's covered with a virus known as humanity. Isn't that kind of possible?
Yeah, I totally agree. This is where I come in, and you know there's allegedly all types of extraterrestrials visiting us. You know, everything from the Greys, reptilians, you name it. And I look at those, and I look first at human anatomy. You know, and the evolutionary processes that were involved for us humans to have. You know, our head, our two eyes, our two arms, our fingers, our nose, etc. And we're unique. This planet is very unique. You know, we're here in the Goldilocks zone, etc. And for a planetary system, you know, light years away, and for that planetary system to have the same evolutionary processes that we had, and for some species to evolve kind of similar to us, two eyes. You know, the nose, that two legs and two arms. When you look at these Greys, they're one in a quadrillion. So it's very difficult for me as a planetary scientist to suggest that there are extraterrestrial entities out there similar to Earth, you know, to humans that have been able to kind of grow like us. So that's kind of tough for me to swallow. That doesn't mean that, you know, maybe they did. But
yeah.
I look at the math involved. A lot of people, you know, they come in, it's, you know, they're interested into this kind of stuff, but they really don't understand how big space is. They don't understand the dangers of interstellar travel. And then you get the people that will say, well, no, they invented
30 billion,
you know,
planets.
Yeah. And then people say, well, no, they must have
30 billion planets are capable.
As a planetary scientist, there has to be life out there somewhere. It to me, that's indisputable. We cannot be the only ones in the universe out of the billions of stars out there and the billions of galaxies. But it's a different question when you ask, can they be visiting us? You know, I'm more leaning towards maybe they're visiting us by drones or robotic probes and things like that. But interstellar travel is, you know, space is huge. And even if they were to develop some type of spacecraft that can travel remotely close to the speed of light, they would have to started their journey millions of years ago for them to even...
Well, the fuel alone, Antonio.
Yeah.
When you look at fuel, if you develop the ramjet engine, the ramjet or the pulse system...
Yeah.
There's so many different systems, and again, they take, I think the quickest it will take us to get there was something like 54 years if we were traveling at the speed of light. It's crazy. They're crazy
it's
figures.
It's crazy.
But
here's
we're looking at it.
Yeah.
We're looking at it from a very human point of view. We need to look at this from a slightly different point of view. And have they got
we're biased.
Advanced knowledge?
As humans, We are biased to our thoughts, and you know a good example would be, okay, so aliens, you know, aliens must be using, you know, wormholes or interdimensional travel or those types of things. Those are things that us as humans invented, you know, in our minds using the mathematics that we're well aware of. And I can
absolutely
argue, and I can argue and say, well, you know what, if humans came up with the warp speed and interstellar travel and the mathematics involved, our mathematics, Earth mathematics, but some civilization billions of light years away were able to develop the same thing possibly with our mathematics, then who's to say that those aliens have not invented Apple Pie or the iPhone? So it's, you know, it's very difficult.
Or Windows.
Yeah,
or Windows. Windows. Windows changed the earth.
It's a very complex phenomenon. You know, people are seeing things out there, and I can't debate that. But if it, what they're seeing is what I'm trying to answer, and I think we have a long road ahead of us.
Yeah. Well, we had a UFO sighting recently where I live, and it was reported as an orange ball. The problem with orange balls that I have, excuse my pronunciation, but problems I have is not, they glow. Orange is a glowy colour. It's not a bright colour. You know, anyone that's really seen a UFO will say it was a bright colour. It was bright. That's the first thing they say. This was an orange glow. So in our opinion, it could have been the ISS. We did a check. The ISS went over Norfolk or Suffolk 2 days prior, or 2 days after. I can't remember now. We did some local checks in the archives, and we really begin to see a pattern emerging that orange balls have been sighted almost every year since 2008. So there's me thinking, okay, the amount of orange balls that are reported is coincided with this time of year. So I theorize basically that it's a celebration that's taking place, and they're being launched in celebration of something that's taking place annually. It's as simple as that. And if everyone around the world is having a celebration, usually millions of people on every single day, then there's going to be balloons or Chinese lanterns, you know, launched airborne all the time. But the thing is, Chinese lanterns have got particular characteristics. They do not travel at high speed. They do not make sudden movements, and they do not glow bright white. So when you see these kind of things, that's when you know that you're onto something that's a bit different from the balloon. But we certainly get, sorry, not the balloon, the lantern. But we certainly get a lot of these reports, and, you know, unfortunately for us, they just turn out to be Chinese lanterns. In a few moments' time, we've got your equivalent, Antonio. His name is Nigel Wright, and he's called the Crazy Ufologist. He's a fantastic guy. He's live with us now in the studio. We're going to bring him live on air in 3 minutes' time. We're going to have two experts, paranormal show with two UFO experts on one show. That's amazing. That's amazing. And we've got Kurt Logsdon as well. Now, Kurt's a superstar, as you probably know, Antonio.
I'm not a superstar, Antonio. I just like to run off at the mouth sometimes. That's basically it.
Kurt's in the USA, and, you know, obviously where he's from, or the area that he's from. When you talk about restricted airspaces and so on, this is something I want to get into as well, because not a lot of people know about restricted airspace. Not a lot of people. I mean, I have a pilot's license, so I know about airspace and where commercial vehicle travels and the ceiling heights of commercial aircraft and the ceiling heights of military aircraft. But then when you start looking above that, you know, 90,000 feet, and you've got an object that's about half the size of an aeroplane, and that's absolutely stationary and glowing white. I mean,
you have to be careful with that.
I've seen that myself.
You have to be careful with that, because eyewitness testimony is really the worst type of evidence out there. And it's very difficult for humans to determine the size of an object and distance of an object, especially if it's in the sky or some type of altitude, without having something to make a reference point. So you'll get a lot of stories of credible pilots or credible people, and they'll say, "Oh my God, I saw something the size of an aircraft carrier." You have to be careful with that type of testimony, because a lot of times the eyes, you know, the human mind and perception are very difficult when you're trying to estimate size, distance, and speed and things like that.
Absolutely. Without a reference as well. When you're flying, you don't get a reference.
Especially, and as well as description. And I'll give you a good quick example. Not too long ago, I had five UFO investigators, you know, really good professionals, know their stuff. And I had a big, giant screen up on the wall, and I quickly just put up a picture of a typical flying saucer for about 5 seconds. And I put it away and we had lunch. And an hour later, I told each one of them, I need you to draw me that flying saucer. And I have 5 different sketches. So
wow.
So as you can see, even professional investigators, really, the mind really wants to draw or wants to remember what it wants to remember most of the time. So when a witness tells me they saw something that was, you know, the size of a football field, but they didn't know distance or angle or azimuth and stuff like that. More importantly, if it's something that happened 10, 20, 30 years ago, you need to kind of discard that and continue with the interview.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Because at the end of the day, you know, I've taken statements off individuals, and you can have two people standing right next to each other, and they don't even give the same description.
Exactly.
It's because we don't really need that ability. I mean, when you work for an organization, you become trained, and then your thought patterns are, you know, as per your training. So you just kick into an automatic pilot mode and you go through the processes. I do it when I'm walking with the family. You know, I kind of go into a kind of a routine that I have when I'm at work. So it's interesting when people are at work that they fall into an automatic mode and you know, I'm an investigator, right? I'm just going to draw what I think I saw, or just draw to satisfy the image. But, you know, when you're doing things like witness statements, and you've got to really have an accurate drawing. So I always say to people, draw at the same time. If you haven't got it at the same time that you saw it, then you're never going to remember it. Never going to remember it.
That's why old cases, I rarely open old cases in this, unless they mail me some type of physical proof. But if something happens 50, 60 years ago, A, you know, the witnesses are probably either gone or the evidence is washed away or something. But, you know, I have a criteria so that when we do open investigations, we look for things that are relatively recent, multiple witnesses, a daylight sighting, and some type of object. You know, we're not really chasing lights in the sky or things like that. Even the investigations that we open usually have to fit a criteria.
Excellent stuff. Well, that's how you do it. That's how you do a real investigation. You have a particular pattern, and that way, when you get the data, you know you've got a set stream of data, and you can start to analyze that, which is, you know, for us as investigators, that's a really difficult thing to do. So we're going to talk to another investigator, the crazy ufologist, in a few moments' time. But in the meantime, guys and girls, you're listening to NLPI Friday Night Paranormal Show with Mickey Gokul and Kurt Logston. Woo! Yes, it's Friday night, and we have got live in the studio. Well, not live in the studio, he's in America. We have got Antonio from Aerial Phenomena, the director of Aerial Phenomena, one of the biggest USA agencies for investigating UFOs. Okay, the director is here. We've been talking to him. We've also got the crazy ufologist, and we've also got live from his performance in Anna tonight, all the way in Edinburgh. He joins us. He's just come from his show, performed a few moments ago, and he's here as well. So hopefully we'll hear from you, Joe Gooch, a British actor on stage, and I can't believe it, you came off stage to join this show. Kurt, that is just pure show business.
That's hard work right there, man. That is definitely hard work. To come and talk to us after putting on a show where you're drained mentally and physically, and to talk to us about UFOs, way cool in my book. Definitely.
Hey guys, and let's welcome the crazy ufologist.
Well, hello. Hello. Hello.
Hi, Mickey.
Nigel. We can hear you fine. Nigel.
I do.
How have
I
you been, sir?
Well, panic-stricken for the last 20
did.
Minutes. But we got there in the end. We've had to swap from the tablet back to my smartphone. I hope the connection's okay. You can all hear me all right.
Sound great.
Your connection. Yeah, you sound better than me. You can have the show. Let me introduce you to a good friend of ours. His name's Antonio Paris. He's
Hello,
the director
Antonio?
Of Aerial Phenomena.
Hey, what's up, Nigel? Been dying to chat with you guys.
Yeah. I've had technical problems, shall we say. I've thrown a new tablet out the window, stamped on the laptop, and I'm back on the smartphone. But yeah, we're fine, thanks.
Yeah, I just want to let you guys know we have a major thunderstorm right now, and in this area we tend to lose power. So if I get cut off, it's not because I don't love you guys. It's because we have a really cheap power plant here. So I just want to warn you guys.
Yeah, I've been reading about power plants.
Before you go, let's get a little rundown from you, Antonio, with regards to UFOs and activity. If you had to summarize in a few words what is going on out there, why people like Joe Gooch, he's a normal guy, and 30 years ago he was. Well, I'm going to let him tell you his story because it's an interesting story and I'd like to get your take on it as well, and you, Nigel. But let's bring Joe Gooch on because he's come here live from his show in Edinburgh, which is Anna. Okay, so if you're in Edinburgh, if you're in Scotland, go and see the show because we've got the actor right here. Joe, how are you doing, sir?
Hi, Mickey. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. How are you doing?
Excellent. Yeah, I'm doing good, thanks, mate. Literally just got off stage.
You. Do you know that's so? Only you could do something so showbiz, Joe.
Well, you know me.
Well, welcome to the show, fella. The stage is cheers, yours, mate. So to speak. We've got the crazy ufologist is here, but Antonio has got very limited time, so we're going to make the most of his time as well. Introduce yourselves, guys.
Hi, I'm Joe. Good to speak to you, Antonio and Nigel, crazy ufologist. Hope you're doing all right, mate. Do you want me to go into my story or?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
I think so.
Yeah? Okay, well, my first UFO encounter happened 30 years ago last December. It was a Christmas morning. I was about 10 years old, 10, 11 years old. And me, my dad, and my older brother were just on our way to church. It was 7:30 a.m. And we got down to the bottom of our street, and there was these two strips of light just hanging in the air, like the sort of light strip lights you get in offices, those sort of long kind of lights, if you know what I mean. There was one on the left and one on the right with a little gap in between them. Now, the one on the left moved quite quickly and stopped and waited for the one on the right to slowly catch up with it, which it did, and still maintaining a little gap in between. Then they did the same thing again. The one on the left moved really quickly, furthermore to the left, whilst the one on the right caught up with it. And then they both disappeared. So that was my first encounter. And that was daylight, and like I say, with two other witnesses.
Yeah, did any of those objects have, like, can you determine size? Or can you, I don't like sketches because that happened so long ago, especially, you were 10 years old.
Yeah.
But what was you, today? What do you think it was? I always like to ask the witness not only what their impression was, but what do they think is it what they observed?
Well, I mean it's hard. I mean that's the big question, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Obviously they weren't planes, they weren't helicopters, there was no sound. They were literally just lights. I couldn't see any like structured craft or anything like that. They were literally just two bright lights in a clear sky.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? People say, oh, yeah. Well, it's clearly extraterrestrials. Or,
that's what we call the argument. That's called the argument of ignorance. Well, I don't know what that was, so it has to be aliens. Here's the tricky part with UFO investigations. What you're really doing is really studying something that already happened.
Exactly.
And especially if the witness lacks any type of physical evidence or at least a photo, what you're really doing is just collecting data, taking the witness's information, Hopefully, you know, I have all the reasons to believe that you're telling the truth, but that's all we can do. You know, you saw something. Hopefully, you know, if you look for other patterns of something that was similar, maybe you can come to, we can come with some type of analysis. But I hate the when people use the term UFO hunters, because I quickly learned that UFOs don't like to be hunted. You can't really find them. It's a little different than paranormal investigations and stuff like that, where, you know, people go out with EVPs and try to collect data. For UFOs, it's a little different. There's a lot of teams that allegedly go out there with night vision goggles and try to capture something. But when it comes to UFO investigations, it's always it's almost like a detective squad. You know, they're getting something that already happened. Whether it's,
well, it's always historical, isn't it?
Yeah, whether it's a robbery or homicide, the fact already occurred, and that's difficult to investigate.
Sorry to interrupt.
Oh no, go ahead, buddy. That's fine. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, that's true in the majority of cases. Except there's a guy called Joe Kiernan. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Yep.
There's an ongoing case, Myrtle Beach, which has been going on. It's been going on for I think over a year now, and he's got loads of footage. He's not the only one who's seen these weird lights doing strange formations in the sky. He's contacted MUFON and he just can't get them out there. They just won't send it.
Yeah, well, the business of chasing just lights is not something that, as both a MUFON investigator, because I am a MUFON investigator with the STAR team, but even with Aerial Phenomena as well, it's very difficult to also just investigate lights. You know, we've gotten a lot of light cases where they just ended up being lasers or plasma testings and things like that.
Been going on for over a year. So why is
I don't know the agenda behind why somebody. There's a lot of investigators in Maryland. I don't know why they wouldn't visit to check this guy out. I would if I was in Florida and had that time. I definitely want to see what this guy has.
And also, what does MUFON do with their information? They never. I mean, they collect this information. What do they do with it?
MUFON's a really big enterprise. Each state. Although MUFON in general does have an investigative process and protocols in place, each state is different, really, between other states. Florida is a big state, and they have a huge pool of MUFON investigators. I don't know why they, you know, if the guy's reporting it on the MUFON website, I don't know why, what's the agenda behind that they're not reporting it. It could be manpower issues or they think this guy's a phony or something. I don't know.
But I mean, he's not the only one. I mean, there's so many other people who've got this footage. It just seems crazy that, like as you say, it's so hard to investigate UFOs because there's never a UFO there to investigate.
Yeah, so when I've got
a lot of... There's all this phenomena going on, and no one's going out to investigate it. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's a very... UFO investigations are really difficult to investigate. Even with all the tools that we have, whether it's radiation detectors, you name it, radar tracking, a whole list of stuff that we use, 99% of the time, you know, it is something that we can easily identify, satellite, meteor, aircraft, whatever. But that 1%, I'll even go a little further, about 3% of the cases we look at are closed as unidentified. Because we just don't know what it is. And I can't lean towards the conclusion that it's extraterrestrial if I have no proof that it's extraterrestrial. Even if it's an exotic aircraft that made some type of maneuver beyond the capabilities of conventional aircraft, that still doesn't tell me that it's extraterrestrial. It's something exciting. It's something strange. It's a phenomena. But for me to say, well, because I can't identify it, so it's extraterrestrial, that's putting just, you know, insult to injury.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just leading to a conclusion, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I'm listening to you right now, and I can tell you're sincere. You saw something, and that's very personal to you, and you'll probably have that for the rest of your life. And I get a lot of that. I get a lot of cases where people just cry. They sit down with me, Antonio, I know what I saw. I have to, you know, I'm not a counselor. I'm not there to hug them. I'm an investigator. But the most that I can do is collect their data, and do the best I can to try to identify the object for them.
I mean, that was the first of my encounters. I've had about another.
I want to hear your second one.
Okay. All right.
We're going to see what Nigel's going to say. We've got Nigel in the wings, a crazy ufologist. So we're going to get Nigel's take. Yeah, we'll get Nigel's take on this as well. Nigel, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, I've been listening very carefully to that. I mean, I agree to a lot of what's been said there. Hi, Joe, by the way. That's a fascinating story. I mean, obviously, what I do when people tell me stories or relate, you know, experiences, I tend to close my eyes and try and visualize what they're describing. And I would say that there is an intelligence behind what you saw,
mm-hmm.
definitely by the sequencing of the patterning of the lights. Whether that's alien or not is open for debate. My aspect, I do historical research more on cases because I found that where you get UFO sightings, there tends to have been a pattern of UFO sightings in the past in the same area.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of research on that aspect because I've got a particular theory that certain areas attract UFO activity and others don't. This goes way, way back, you know, in over about 30 years or so.
Yeah.
So I would suggest, you know, that sort of incident isn't isolated in a one-off. I would suggest that it's probably been happening before there in the past. Now, that if that's the case, then there is something in that area which is attracting UFO activity, and it could be EMF, it could be geomagnetic, it could be all sorts of natural phenomena too, because geomagnetics will kick up natural superheated plasma. You get the ball of light. So, I mean, Mickey was on about orange balls of light earlier on. That's called through superheated plasma. You get a lot of activity like that over the volcanoes in Mexico. So, you know, it could be a thing. I mean, I'm waiting to hear the second one now. I'm all wound up as well. You got me going there, John. I'm waiting to hear the one, so carry on. Sorry, guys.
That's all right. No, but it's funny you mentioned that, Nigel, about other phenomena, because where we saw those two UFOs is down the street that I was born on. And there's been so much paranormal activity in general on that street. In my parents' house, we had a poltergeist. I mean, loads of weird things going on in there. People in the houses across my parents, they've had stuff going on. People next door have had stuff going on. A woman down the road who lives in a house where we saw these two UFOs pretty much above, she's had apparitions appear in her bath, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So it seems to be quite a hotbed of general paranormal activity in that area.
Yeah. Any black cat sightings around there?
Not that I know of, but I did have a. I used to have a ghost of a black cat in my flat a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, we used to see it jumping off
shelves and things, and actually jumped on my face and woke me up, which scared the
hell out of me. I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, Mickey will know what I'm getting at now because I've got this theory about areas of activity that the strangeness. Areas of high strangeness is what we call them. I mean, it seems to be that these sort of paranormal activities are related into certain areas. It's really just the trick is to find out what it is that's causing all this to happen in certain areas. There is a tie-in, you know. And I think that is part of the solution. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Who's that?
This is Kurt lurking in the shadows. I apologize.
Hello, Kurt.
How you guys doing? How's everybody doing?
All right,
hello,
mate.
How you doing?
Kurt.
Stumbled into a shed or something. Are you right?
And I'm jumping back now.
Kurt, your microphone was going blip 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 blip. So, guys, so we got it. Here we are with two of, well, one of America's finest aerial phenomena's director, the top man himself is here, Antonio, and of course the crazy ufologist, Nigel Wright. Joe.
Yes.
What is going on? You know, you're a man that we've spoken. You've been on an investigation with us. You know how we do things, and I've seen something in over where we live, over the back garden, and I've not been able to account for it. You know, we spoke earlier about understanding the height, how high a vehicle is, or how high in space or in feet that this object would be. Well, the way I look is I look at aerial commercial traffic, and, you know, the ceiling height for commercial traffic is about 40,000 feet. So when you see a little dot with a great big chemtrail, oh, sorry, not chemtrail, mustn't say that, you know, the exhaust fumes coming out, you know, you look at these and you say, right, okay, well, that's that object I know X long and X wide, and it looks like that at 40,000 feet. But when you look at another object that still looks X long and X wide, but has no chemtrail whatsoever, and seems to be at twice the distance, you think, hang on a minute, that's travelling at erratic speed, then stationary, then it travels at erratic speed, then stationary, and it's glowing white bright, as if somebody's shining a laser beam directly into my eye. That's not anything but intelligence, and certainly not of this planet, because we haven't got anywhere near that capability at this time. Unless, of course, we do, and we're 40 years behind with our own technology. The military are always ahead. So, is it us? Or is it them?
Or is it just Mother Earth trying to communicate with us? And that's the only way she can do it. Or that's one of the ways she can do it.
Hmm. The other thing as well for Antonio, who, you know, he's got a book out as well, guys and girls. So, listen to it. We're going to talk about the book in a few moments' time. But this is the problem I have. When people have or report that they have had an alien encounter, and they've had an encounter of the third kind, they always say, not always, in majority of the cases, they say there's a message for Earth. You know, we need to stop fighting each other, and it's the only way to progress. And then you get these people that are complaining of alien abductions. And they sometimes come out of these abductions with marks all over their bodies in the right places. Well, my daughter has a mark across her forehead, which only comes out when she's stressed or under great stress. So if she's been running around the garden, she's got a mark. And it looks as if she's run head first into a brick wall. It's like that, you know, it comes up and then it goes. Mm. So that's not a phenomenon, that's just a condition that she has that happens. But could that be, if you're in a hypnotic trance state and you believe that, well, you're in your bed and all of a sudden you're unable to move, you're unable to breathe, you're unable to scream. Or, hang on a minute, I'm a paranormal investigator, I'm a Ghostbuster. And we get the same thing. We get the same thing. The sleep paralysis, they call it. But people witness two individuals. Whenever there's an abduction, there always seems to be two individuals. They also witness an old lady. They say it's an old lady and a man of varying heights. And sometimes some of the UFO reports say the same thing. So is it really paranormal? Is it just something that's gone wrong with our dimensions? Is it just the fact that maybe these could be the same UFOs,
Mickey,
aliens, ghosts?
There's
it could just be another
talk.
Dimension.
Mickey, if it had happened to you, you would know, my friend. You know that I will put allegedly because, all right, I happen to think it was true. You know, I was allegedly abducted when I was a kid, and my parents were at the same time, and no, they weren't little greys and they weren't little greens. They were actually what you would describe as we call Nordics, which are like blonde, blue-eyed, fairly human-looking characters. And, you know, this wasn't a message to the world. All that I was told when after being shown a screen, which now I recognise to be DNA sequencing, was that they were after a DNA fault, which happened in my parents, and was to do with bowel cancer, which I, in fact, suffered later on. And they were trying to do some research on this DNA. So it wasn't a question of, oh, look, we come to give you a message to save the world. It was a very personal sort of thing. And that was following a UFO sighting that all three of us had the same evening earlier, during a thunderstorm, funny enough. my mum and dad saw this cigar-shaped craft. It's portholes down the side. You could see the occupants. It was hovering over power lines with what appeared to be some sort of pickup rod underneath.
Yeah.
Picking up current from the lines, presumably, tilted to a 45-degree angle and shot off into space. So, there you go.
Here's my take on abductions is, if it's happening, is who are these people and what is their agenda, and at what point will they end their studies? You know,
if you look at the data, this allegedly has been happening perhaps for thousands of years. And let's just stick to one race. Let's say it's just one race, the Nordics, for example. And if they've been visiting us for thousands of years, at what point you can only research us for so much. We're not that big of a deal, human beings. And Earth is very small comparatively with other planets out there. So, you know, us humans, we went to the moon. We were done in 4 weeks. We finished our thesis and we're done. At what point will these guys complete their thesis, their studies, and their observations on us and move on to wherever they were going? So that's my take, you know. What's their agenda behind this if it is something that's actually uniquely happening? Why hide? You know, I hate the fact that people keep telling me, we're not prepared or stuff like that. Give me a break.
No.
We're as prepared as we can be. We're not that dumb. If we can invent a piece of device that can be a phone, a camera, and whatever, 1,000 gadgets in one thing, I think we reach the precipice that we're intelligent beings and that we're ready for contact if they exist.
Absolutely.
So that's my point.
But Antonio, there's one thing that is very, very common, especially when you look on YouTube. On YouTube, every single person that captures a video of a flying saucer shows no fear whatsoever.
Yeah, I get that a lot. I've got a handful of cases, even as recent as November and this year, 3 or 4 cases where the witness was not afraid. They were compelled to get out of the car, and for reasons unknown, they forgot to grab their iPhone or the Galaxy S3 to snap a photo. But they weren't scared. They were compelled to look at this thing, and they felt invited to look at whatever they were looking at. So that's interesting in itself. So on very rare occasions do I get a witness that mentions they were frightened and they tried to run and they were scared. It's always something that's omnipotent and that they actually wanted to see.
Well, you just got to look on YouTube and it's full of UFO reports. I mean, there's people that just almost want to go and you know, establish a contact with it. And that's how I would feel.
I wouldn't advise that.
Because, no. I'll have a beer or two, take it with me.
A lot of the abduction cases are not fun. You know, people being medically examined, scarred, probed up the butt, you name it. Why would anybody want to be subjected to that? I don't know.
Have you obviously never spoken to Kurt Loveston before?
Oh, I knew that was coming.
There might be a few, and they're probably all out of San Francisco.
Antonio, tell me about your book, sir. Your book.
Yeah, the book is a really interesting, small. It's not that big. It's only 160 pages. You can read it in a day. But it's the book is called Aerial Phenomena, and it's subtitled Reviving Ufology for the 21st Century. And make sure you guys email me this, because I'm going to send all of you guys on here tonight a complimentary copy. So the book is 3 parts. The first one is, who is aerial phenomena? What is it that we do? What is it that we don't do? And the tools and processes involved in the investigations that we do. The second half of the book are 50 cases, a synopsis of the top 50 cases we did for 2012. Really good cases from basic UFOs to alleged men in black, alien abductions, and even alien demons. And I think I sent you one of those cases about a year ago. And then the third part of the book is what I envision what ufology should be in the next few years. Because right now, like I mentioned earlier in the program, it's really a tainted subject. It's a run amok with conspiracy theories and hoaxes and fairies and Bigfoot and chupacabras. You go to these UFO conventions and half of it's inundated with things that have nothing to do with UFOs. And I think the media, Hollywood, all that stuff has to do part of it too. So the last part of the book is, what's wrong with ufology and what should we do to fix it? But that's a serious subject at hand. So that's pretty much the synopsis of the book. It's a really good book. It's easy to read. I intentionally wrote it so that the average person can read it with not a bunch of gobbledygook. So that's pretty much it.
Great stuff, sir. Great stuff. Listen,
yeah.
It's been an absolute education having you on the show. Joe, I'm sure Joe has got a little bit of advice. The next time you see a UFO, Joe, we're going to have to start taking pictures and carrying cameras with us.
They always leave their cell phone in the car. Come on, guys.
Well, like I say, I've had four since my first one, but yeah, I mean, my camera's not too good on my phone.
It happened to me. It happened to me when we had a case where, you know, the local ghost busting case. We had a case where the Highgate Vampire, which is a case very close to us, has been going on for 40 years. And we decided one night we're going to go in not in our Ghostbuster uniform. We left that at home. But we went after a meal. We went along by Highgate Cemetery where this spirit of a vampire is supposed to have been seen. And whilst we were showing our medium the actual cemetery where the spirit was seen, it made itself visible to us. And we had an encounter with this spirit that was mistaken for a vampire. But really and truly, it was just an undertaker, not a vampire. And, I, you know, when I think about it, I didn't have one camera. You know, my cell phone was in the car. you know, it was just a stupid situation. And it would have been the best thing if only I had a camera. But, you know, this is what we need to do. We all need to walk around with a cell phone, with a built-in camera, and make sure that we get a picture. Yeah. They're not always the best of UFOs, but they give us some idea of what the person seeing. And the other thing, Antonio, there's no such thing as a clear UFO picture.
There's never. It's beyond me why in today's age we're running around with 10 megapixel camera phones and you always get a really cheesy photo. And then the good ones turn out to be hoaxes for some reason. But listen, hey guys, you have my email, Mickey. Shoot me an email, you know, whenever you can, hopefully today, and write down the list of names of you four guys that were on the host. But I need the name so I can sign the book in your names, and I'll ship those out first thing in tomorrow or Monday. Usually it takes only about 2 days.
Oh, that's fantastic.
To get to London.
Thanks.
But look, I love you guys. I enjoy being with you guys. If in the event, I'm going to the Europe next month, hopefully, and I'm trying to organize a day and a half layover in London. And if that is the case, I will totally reach out to you guys, and we'll go hit a pub and something and maybe do an investigation or something together.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah,
right.
Investigation in the pub.
Thanks very much,
ladies and gentlemen.
In the pub, there you go.
Antonio Paris.
Love you guys.
From the
Cheers, Antonio.
Aerial Phenomena.
Cheers, Antonio.
Off. It's 10:32 and we've got 28 minutes to go. We'll be back in a moment. This is the NLPI Friday Night Paranormal Show with Mickey Gokul and Kurt Logsdon. Yeah, Kurt Logsdon with a creaky chair.
I'm sorry about that, guys. I apologize. I was so listening to, like, it was so intense what he was talking about and the experiences that Joe had and Nigel. I just froze and tried to listen. And I tried to not make any noise, and then I'd hear muted. I'm like, oh shit, I guess I'm making noise again. and I tried to figure out where the noise was coming from. I was like, was
it sounds like you're kicking tins of paint or something.
Okay. I know I'm screwing up when I hear muted, so I'm just going, all right, I got to figure this one out real quick.
We're going to ship you out some 3-in-1 oil, Kurt.
I need some, man. I tell you what, I need some.
I don't know what it is about me. See, I'm a paranormal magnet. Wherever I've been in life, I either get UFOs, ghosts, or black cats chasing me around. I don't know what it is.
I'm like
a psychic dustbin, you know?
I got a question for you, Joe, real quick. All right.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to ask this this is kind of aside from the UFO. Just it's a 2 minute question and, and 1 minute answer.
Okay.
Why are theaters so haunted? And at that, it's off track of UFOs, and I apologize. Why do you think theaters are haunted?
Good question.
I know.
Mickey knows. Go on in, Mickey. You go.
Energy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to know. Boom. Back to UFOs.
The actors are egotistical.
How dare you?
All actors still wish to perform, even when they've passed over. They still feel they want to perform to the public, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe, or maybe all ghost directors. That's what it is. They're just unemployed on the other side.
Yeah. Well, resting.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's all right. I've been a bit of a hamstram a few years back. I know what you mean.
We did a test a little while ago, and what we found was we went to a dojo where they practiced karate. And we just did an EMF test on some of the mannequins that you fight, you know, the ones that are made out of wood, and they're really solid. And I can't remember what the dummies that they use. And one of them used to belong to Bruce Lee, that was in this dojo in North London. And we went along there, and the guy was something like a 17 Dan Grandmaster, and he was telling us about this experience he was having. Ex-bodyguard for Steven Seagal. He was a big and very, very clever man when it came to martial arts. And he showed us this dummy that Bruce Lee would practice on. And we took EMF readings from this piece of wood that had been carved into almost like a human form so that you can practice your moves. And you know what happened? It started to give us results from this actual piece of wood. It was giving us EMF results. Which I found was interesting because you don't get that from a piece of wood. So I believe the energies that have used the stage have been transferred to the stage somewhat, because when you go on stage, you know the score, Joe, you feel different. You're never you. You're always somebody else. And then you come off stage and you're, you know, I've got life to live. And, you know, and sometimes the lights are on and you don't see the audience and you become the person. That makes a great actor. I don't know, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But at the end of the day, you know, the energy on the stage is always there no matter what stage you're on. And I believe that if you're, especially in old spirit, you know, the place that you love the most was being a performer on stage, because that's what your goal and your ambition was, wasn't it?
It could also,
isn't it?
Well, yeah, but it could also be that, because like the play I'm doing at the moment, we are creating a lot of energy. There's a lot of negative energy, actually, just because it's about Anna Politkovskaya, the Russian journalist who was assassinated in 2006, and all the stuff she went through to try and get the stories out about atrocities in Chechnya that the Russian soldiers were doing and stuff like that. So a lot of the energy we're creating is quite negative energy. So maybe just the constant creating of that in a certain space, maybe that doesn't actually dissipate. Maybe it actually just gets added to, and that can cause, you know, maybe that can form in some way and cause strange things to happen. Who knows? You know, maybe, because obviously in old theatres, you've had so many, you know, sometimes over 100 odd years of energies being created, whether it's positive energy in comedies or tragedy or, you know, all kinds of different energies mixing together. So that must have some effect. So maybe that's the reason why.
We'd like to investigate and find out one day.
Yeah.
That would be good. But that would be for a different show, because tonight we're talking about UFOs. And you've had an experience, Joe. Nigel, the crazy ufologist, was abducted. I mean, the guy's been abducted by UFO. And Kurt, well, we're just hoping.
Oh, thanks, Mickey. Don't worry. You'll be the first one we probe.
Oh, come on, you guys.
You're talking about photographs of UFOs looking good or faked. The second time I saw a UFO, if you had taken a photograph of it, you would have said that was fake, because it looked fake whilst I was looking at it. It kind of looked, it looked two dimensional. It was white, and it kind of looked like a helicopter flying backwards, but with no rotor blades and nothing underneath, but a two dimensional.
Yeah.
And it just sort of flew overhead and across as if it was like a piece of paper on the inside of a glass bowl. It just sort of skimmed across the sky and over. And it went through my mind as I was looking at it. I actually said in my mind, "What, you really expect me to believe that?" Because it just looked so fake. So if you had taken a photograph of that, you would have said, "Oh, that looks shit. That's a fake."
Yeah.
But it looked fake while I was looking at it.
Well, that's a great 22 of ufology. You know, whatever you do, you'll never get a perfect UFO photograph, because if it's too good, people say it's a fake. Yeah. Otherwise, if it's too blurry, they say, well, it could be anything. And you'll never get the perfect UFO photograph. That's the holy grail. Never going to happen, because
Never going to get the perfect EVP, and you're never going to get the perfect ghost photograph.
Exactly.
So what we've done as a group, I mean, we've more or less resigned to the fact that we're never going to get the ghost photograph. So what we're doing as a group is we are actually not looking for the evidence, like tangible proof that yes, that's a ghost, but we're looking for evidence that would suggest that put it this way, we've got a kind of design that we're implementing at the moment in our investigations, and it's almost like a John Travolta dance floor where, you know, when you step on the pads it lights up, but we've got an LED version that will light up a little in a bit more detail. So if there's anything that travels along this thing, then it will react with the sensors in the floor and it will create a pattern, and you'll visibly be able to see that pattern. Mo is in the chat room there, he's listening to the show, and we're talking to Mo at the moment about this design and using it in investigations and prototyping some other stuff. So we've more or less resigned to the fact that we're not going to get the picture that we want, but we can certainly photograph, we can record, and we can do this all day long, and we can get the reaction that the entity has on the environment and on our sensors by placing a lot more sensors in a lot more concentrated areas to give us a more more kind of finite picture that we're trying to build. It's interesting, but at the end of the day, we're never ever going to get the real deal unless you're there.
Well, I had the chance, you know. I mean, I was like you. I had the chance to get the perfect picture. I came across, and it wasn't a UFO, a ghost. It was a black cat, and I saw one. I was driving back. I think I told you this story before, Mickey. 11:30 at night, and this thing just sat in the middle of the road, 50 yards from my car, and it was as plain as day. I had a fully loaded camera, digital camera with new batteries, in the glove locker, and I just sat there and froze. And this thing just slowly leapt up to the hedge and went. And I missed the opportunity of a lifetime, because I could have had a fantastic photo of a most solid, beautiful, black, melanistic leopard sat there looking at me right in the middle of a road in Devon. And, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? You know, you were saying you didn't have a camera when the ghost at Highgate Cemetery, the spirit, you know, materialised there in front of you. You missed these opportunities. And mine was just like...
It was the ghost. It was the Highgate vampire that people at David Farrant's been investigating for 40 years. It was the guy that people say was the vampire, and I didn't have a camera. Can you imagine? I mean, you know, Highgate being in North London, which is our patch, and it was a big famous story, and it's all going on. Can you imagine that we saw this thing that we've been investigating, and we literally just looked at it and, you know, think, but, you know... Oh, we're never going to get that. We're never, ever going to get that. And if we do, we're going to be subjected to, is it real or is it fake? And to be quite honest,
you must be fake,
I don't really,
because you're in the subject, you know, I mean, I've seen orange orbs a lot, but I've never, ever been able to capture a decent photograph of one. Not once. And it really annoys me, you know. It bugs me somewhat, but there you go. You know, it's like you say, I don't think you ever achieve it, but you just kind of keep on trying, you know.
You have to keep on trying, and this is it. As you were saying, Joe, what do you believe could be a reason for why we can't see these things or capture these things?
Well, maybe the reason we can't get decent photographs of ghosts or UFOs or any sort of paranormal phenomena is because when it's happening for the observer rather than to be something that's shown around to people, to be passed around and shown. It's a personal thing that's occurring for the person who's experiencing it. Maybe that's the reason.
That's a possibility.
Also, if you take light, for example, that is also a possibility, because, you know, when you look at a desert, you see a mirage because of the angle and the heat and so on. When you look at particular, when you stand in a particular area in particular parts of the country, and you watch in the distance an aeroplane coming in to land at an airport, all of a sudden you see three stationary bright white lights. Two of them are on the wings, and one will be on the center wheel. And they're what's called approach lights, and they're on the approach to the runway. Now, if you're standing at that runway, and you're looking down the runway on the line that the aircraft's approaching the runway, you'll find that those lights will appear stationary, and they'll appear to move slightly from left to right, and they'll appear to get bigger in size because there are lights coming towards you. And I've seen so many videos on YouTube that are literally aircraft lights that are just coming towards you. Some are not. There's, you know, the ones you posted, the school, the fact that 60 children have witnessed a UFO or two UFOs and their occupants in Zimbabwe. I mean, that's crazy. You know, 60 children. Mm. 60 children can't imagine that. And they all said
that was one of the best UFO cases ever. I think that's just amazing. Just because if you listen to the children's testimony and the things they say, it's just amazing. And there's also there's going to be a documentary coming out where a guy's gone back and re-interviewed the kids now. And there's a few little teaser clips, and they still stand by what they say and what they saw. And if you look it up on YouTube, if you just type in Zimbabwe UFO and just watch it, it's amazing. Just amazing what the kids saw and what they experienced.
Well, we'll have a look at that today.
There is a weird crossover.
I've had a look at that today, and it's interesting, mate. It's really interesting. When you posted that, I just couldn't believe that, you know, these children are... You can't have 60 children imagine the same thing. And they all drew the same object. That must prove that they must have been in close proximity to whatever it was.
You know, there was a similar...
Fascinating stuff.
There's a very similar case to that in South Wales. There was a similar case to that in South Wales with a group of school children, and then they saw one in the school playground, and they actually all witnessed the same sort of UFO, and they all drew exactly the same sketches of what it looked like. I think it was back in the late 70s, early 80s. I'm going off the top of my head, but I know it was in South Wales.
It was one in Australia as well, wasn't it? Westall 66.
Yeah. It's not an uncommon... I mean, they're fantastic because you've got such a group of good witnesses, and they all sort of draw the same thing. You're right. I mean, there's been, about four or five that I know of. I mean, probably a lot more, but that's just off the top of my head again, this stupid filing cabinet mind of mine. clogged up over 40 years worth of ufology, God knows. So, I think it's about four or five that I can think of around the world, at least, that involve classes of school kids. It's why? Well, there you are. That's the answer, isn't it? I don't know, but it's a really good case in Zimbabwe. Wasn't there one also with a missionary in Africa, father who had a load of, as a priest father who witnessed one outside a schoolroom, I think, and it was like a flying platform with these sort of entities, creatures, aliens, who actually stood on the platform, hovering over the actual place.
That's right.
Yeah, that's again another one out of my filing cabinet, dusty thing. I tell you what, if you like haunted theatres, folks, try the Winter Gardens, Morecambe. I've done ghost hunts down in that place, and that is one spooky haunted theatre. I mean, that is seriously haunted place. Yeah, it's got atmosphere.
We were talking about coming to see the theatre, and we will.
Yeah.
Well, we will hopefully when we've got some time, we'll go over and see that theatre and investigate that.
Because if ever there was a place impregnated with energy, it's that place. You know, it's you go
I
in
can
there.
Imagine.
You turn the lights off, because you've got a 120-foot high auditorium, and the thing is like a shell in the back, and you go down, and underneath there's these ruins of these old baths that were there before, and there's rumours of child murders and heaven knows what else. I mean, the place, you get in there and you start doing a vigil in that place, Mickey, and the hairs go up the back of your neck before you even start. It is just incredible atmosphere, absolutely incredible. I was terrified.
I'd be terrified as well, but especially in a place like that. But I'm hoping to take the team up there. It's just we've got so much stuff going on at the moment, especially with the latest UFO reports that we've had in Enfield. Although we've not had the report, we've been talking to the local media about what these could possibly be. And I think we've worked out that, you know, as much as we'd like them to be UFOs, that, you know, from the evidence that, not the evidence, sorry, from the witness statements that we're getting and that we're looking at, we believe that these orange balls of light, or whatever they're being described as, are simply Chinese lanterns that are being launched at this time of year. So yeah. The bottom line is, you know...
Yeah, don't dismiss orange balls of light as Chinese lanterns all the time, Mick, because I actually saw BOLs down in Devon, because, you know, going right back to the 90s, middle 90s, when I wrote the book about what that big UFO wave down there, and we actually were seeing orange balls of light back in the 70s, long before there were Chinese lanterns in the UK, and we were seeing these things floating along in midair in broad daylight and brilliant sunshine, and then just going, you know, Chinese lanterns flicker before they go out, they sort of peter out. These things just went out like a light switch in midair, and they're appearing like a light switch. I mean, they didn't come up from the ground or anything like that. These just sort of appeared in midair, and they went straight along in a straight line, and then disappeared. And they were going against the prevailing wind, some of them. So, you know, it wasn't. There's no way that these were Chinese lanterns, because there was no Chinese lanterns in the UK then. So, I mean, yes, you get a lot of Chinese lanterns, and yeah, probably about 80% of them are Chinese lanterns, but I would say there's a good 20% of BOLs that aren't that thing, you know?
Yeah. And I like to believe that when I've seen an energy or a UFO, that it's actually the real deal. And, you know, when I say the real deal, I mean, I want to seriously believe that I can see a UFO and that I'm looking at a UFO. And that's, yeah, and same with a ghost. That's where we're at when we want to, prove it to somebody. We take a photograph and say, look, you know, this is what I saw. What do you think? But this is the problem. I think too many people are trying to prove that they've seen something. What we should do is just keep on doing what we're doing and getting as much evidence as possible, and then sharing that evidence with everyone else, and then building up a database of what we've got. That will be so much easier. When you look at dendrodating, when they date timbers that are thousands of years old, you know, if we can do that with trees and pieces of wood, then we most certainly can do that with the UFO sightings that have been collated, you know, using modern technology. Look around us, everything we've got is you know, intelligent in some way, shape or form. So we should be able to, literally we should have a database, but we don't. The Ministry of Defence have released their last of their files covering from the 1950s to the 1990s. Oh my God, they've had as much experience as you, Sir Nigel Wright. Do you see what I'm saying? And they've given up. They've given up.
The part of the trouble here with collating data on ufology, oh God, I hate that word, ufology. It's only because we wanted to give ourselves a posh name back in the 70s, early 80s. We decided it would be sound far more scientific to call ourselves ufologists rather than UFO enthusiasts. But okay, I diverse. No, I mean, collecting data, because we've got so many different groups in the UK, and there used to be some commercial value to having good UFO sightings, you know, for the press-wise. So people were a bit secretive about stuff they collated. We never had a central collation point where all this data could be sort of collated and ratified and classified and logged onto a map, so you could see if there were any patterns, because there's not one national collection point. Before a brilliant group, but they never got quite, you know, there's always this sort of commercial and bit of, oh no, I've got this thing and I'm going to hang on to it sort of data, why should I share it with anyone else attitude? And it never worked. In Sweden or Scandinavia, some of the countries over there, they got one group. And that, you know, that one group collates all the information from the country. I think it's Sweden. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's some of the Nordic countries there. And they've got one UFO group for the whole country. And that works, because then you can collate all the information, all the data comes from one point, and you put it on a map. But in Britain, they do fantastic work, the regional groups. Don't knock it. I mean, I know quite a lot of them, and they're great guys and girls. They do terrific work. But, you know, because it's like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle, they're all spread out.
And unless you've got one central point where you're going to collect all that information together, you're never going to get a whole picture. You get fantastic data coming in, but you're never going to get it. And I don't know how you're going to collate it to one point. I've had this argument for years from old ufologists like myself. How do you get one central collection point and do away with the sort of personal interests, you know? You can't at the moment. It's just
you can. You speak to the government, Nigel. You speak to the government and say, hey, we need an agency that will collate all the information of UFO sites in the UK from the 1950s and keep that organisation going all the way through. But, as you know, they stopped it. 2009, yeah. They stopped doing UFO. Officially, they stopped it.
Well, officially they stopped
but,
it. Yeah.
I mean, everyone really believes that they're going to be interested in something that comes into the airspace. You know what I mean? That's not theirs or ours.
They've dangled the biggest carrot. They've given us the biggest carrot. They've given us all their files. Every single file.
No, they haven't. Not all of them.
No, because they haven't.
The Rendlesham files were mysteriously missing.
Absolutely right. Now, why is that?
It's funny, right?
Why is that?
I'll tell you what, it's funny because it's the top, it's the most.
I put the link up on the website and in the NLPI radio Facebook page. It is the most talked about UFO event in the UK. It is the most famous, and the two guys went back there recently to have a look at the forest, and people go back there. Brian Jessup, who is a keen paranormal UFO person like ourselves, you know, he's been there quite a few times, four times, and he says, really, I want to go to see a UFO, but it's never going to come back. So he's never going to go back to Rendlesham Forest because it was a one-off event. It was a one-off event, but it was the biggest one, and there were witnesses. The witnesses were military people, and all of a sudden, the files are no longer available. Somebody's cocked up somewhere.
And it wasn't a one-off event because it happened over a period of two or three nights.
Yeah. Mickey, I spent a day with Larry Warren. I spent the whole day. I was lucky enough to spend near enough a whole day with Larry Warren, one of the witnesses. And I tell you, that guy is the most down-to-earth, honest, decent sort of guy I've ever had the privilege to speak to. There is no making up of that. That was not a flashing lighthouse mistaken for, you know, through the woods to be something like that. It was not an aircraft. It was not a helicopter. What those guys reported actually happened. I believe it 110%. Like I say, I haven't been lucky enough to spend a day with Larry. There is no way on this earth that any of that is fake. What they say they saw, they saw. And like you say, it is the most incredible UFO account. Probably equal, if not better, than Roswell. It really is a fascinating case. And I think, you know, like you say, the files have gone missing. Well, what a surprise. Not.
Yeah.
Once you've been into this game long enough, you know, it's... Don't get me started on governments and files. You know, have they released all their evidence? No. Will they ever release it? Probably not.
This is what they tell us. You know, they tell us that they released all their evidence. I mean, when we look at how many,
you know, they don't know.
Of course,
what
they
it
don't
is.
Understand it.
Yeah, and
they haven't got a clue.
Public, hey, look, there's something in our sky. You know, we can't defend you from it because we don't know what it is. That's going to be a terrific loss of face. No politician's ever going to admit to that. No government's ever going to admit to it. It's far better for them to just dismiss it as being not of any significant military threat to the UK. So,
well, yeah,
you know, and therefore, case closed.
How can you have a mysterious craft that fires blue beams down into nuclear silos and say that's not a... that doesn't threaten national security? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a load of rubbish, isn't it? You know?
Ridiculous, yeah.
Well, maybe our national security isn't what we think it is. Maybe they don't know what we know. Maybe it's them that are the ones that think they know, but they don't. Who knows? Kurt Logsdon, thanks very much tonight for your interest in another interesting show, sir.
It was great.
Great guest tonight. Great, crazy ufologist. We've also had the one and only Antonio Paris from Aerial Phenomena, and he's going to send us all a book, which is really cool. But in the meantime, next week, same show, different content. We're going to continue with the theme of UFOs. So next week we've got UFO, and hopefully I'm going to have another abductee, Stan Romanek. He's probably got one of the famous abductee cases. But in the meantime, it's good night from us, good night from him, good night from Crazy Ufologist, good night from Joe Gooch, good night from Kurt. We see you next week, and I'm going to play you out with a Ghost Adventures spoof. That's done.
My name is Dicky Local. I never believed in hoes until I came in the face of one. So I get out of my bed and capture a whore onto video.
Is everybody queer?
With no big-breasted girls following us around, I am joined closely by my fellow masturbator Lick Cock and our sex toy tech Ivor Biggin. The three of us will fornicate at some of the most highly active Bangkok brothels, where we will spend the entire week getting laid from dusk until dawn.
This is no-